Welcome to In the Name of Game.
Welcome once again to In the Name of Game, a video game podcast. Today is June 16th, 2011. I'm your host, David.
And I'm Iggy.
And I'm Adam.
And I'm Colin.
Woohoo! We got a full house today. So nice. Hopefully we don't all mush on top of each other with the voices and we can actually hear everybody individually. So we're all here to talk about games. It's been kind of a light week, but there's been some interesting developments actually that happened just today. We were talking about this earlier, about Lulzsec, I think is worth mentioning. Just right. Because how crazy I'm sure it's going to get if this is just the beginning or not.
If this was best week ever, this would be the week of, or month, I guess, the month of hacking.
Like hack-stravaganza.
Yes.
Something like that. So basically, Lulzsec is this anonymous group that is apparently really fucking good at hacking other sites. And while I don't think they were the ones responsible for PSN, they were responsible today for hacking various random groups. They hacked Minecraft site, they hacked the Escapist magazine site, and they also
Eve's login server.
Yeah, Eve Online. They fucked up. Who knows who's next? They have a Twitter, which apparently, if people tweet to them places they want demolished, they'll take it into consideration.
They have a phone number, too, actually.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. I read it on Slashdot just about an hour or two ago.
So how did they get that and still manage to stay anonymous?
Well, they said that the area code was somewhere in Columbus, but, I mean, I can hedge a bet that they, you know, worked it out somehow. I'm not sure. You know, I'm not privy to these things, but, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to keep their anonymity now. Well, it'll be interesting to see how this pans out.
Well, I also read on their Twitter that with that phone number, they were getting so many phone calls that then they said, give us a target, and they rerouted that phone number to someone else's business. So everyone was calling a land business, like a mag business. And, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of annoyed with them overall by this because they're just so random with these targets, and I don't like that they're attacking so many different gaming sites.
Right.
Well, they're doing it for the lulz. So.
That term is so tired.
I know. It's
like saying fail. It's almost as bad as saying fail, or epic fail, or putting epic in front of everything, really.
Yeah, but this one is lulz. And it's not very lulzy, in my opinion, I think.
You know, to be honest, I mean, you've seen a lot of laws pop up lately. You know, people have been proposing laws not only in the U.S., but, like, in various EU countries, and especially, like, some Asian countries. I think that Kazakhstan had some strange law where they wanted, you know, every website that is available to Kazakh people to be in Kazakhstan. So, I mean, there's been a whole rut of, like, you know, internet censorship laws popping up in different forms all over the world. And, you know, I can't help but think that this has something to do, you know, like, you know, if there might be some, you know, some sort of shady government organization involved trying to get, you know, get public support for these sorts of laws by taking down, you know, Eve Online. And they took down the CIA's website today. I think they took down something to do with the FBI as well. So, I mean, they're starting to hit government organizations now.
Right.
I can't help but think, you know, it's some sort of false flag attack. Huh.
That's an interesting. I don't know. I mean, that's the problem with being an anonymous group. Like, unless somebody else is smarter than them to figure out, you know, where they're coming from, you'll never really know, like, what their actual purpose is, who's really in it, what, you know, what they're trying to achieve. It can't just be for the lulz. Because, I mean, they obviously have some kind of agenda. It's a little random what the hell their agenda is, because they could have been hitting totally. They could have. What if they had hit all the WoW servers or something? You know, like somewhere where you get a ton of people's reactions right away.
Well,
like
they actually did attack Blizzard's support phone lines. They said they were taking like 200 calls a second at one time during the day.
Yeah, I think that was one of their rerouting attempts where they forwarded all the calls to them. But I heard that they're also going to try to take down WoW.
Really?
Yes.
That's going to
be one of their new targets.
That would be, I mean, that'd be a pretty epic target. Not necessarily in a good way, but I mean, that would definitely get the attention, because how many millions of people play that goddamn game?
It's up to 12 million, wasn't it? Was it up that high?
Is it still that high, though? I mean, it's...
Well, they said there were 12 million accounts, which doesn't mean... they didn't say whether they were active or not.
Mules?
Yeah. So there might be a ton of mules in there. It might be people like me who don't play it anymore and stuff like that.
Interesting. Yeah, it sounds like it could get crazy really fast if these guys can just arbitrarily ransack anything they want. But in any case, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. I mean, because I'm sure that they're not going to just stop. Right. Especially now that some people are like, why are you giving these guys attention? Because they're thriving off of that attention. If everybody just kind of ignored it and said, well, this sucks, but you know, I'm going to go do something else, then perhaps if they're really doing it for the lulls, like they would, I don't want to say that anymore, for the attention.
Right.
Then they might stop or at least leave it for a while because it's not giving them anything back. But now that they have a Twitter that everybody's hitting up so hard and that phone, they're obviously going to have the incentive to keep doing it. So I don't know. Fortunately, we're small enough of a podcast that anything we say will probably never be picked up by them. No targets here. So.
Hope not. Now we just opened ourselves up.
No, I don't think so. How lulzy is that when we have, like, a handful of subscribers listening to us? That's not going to happen. Maybe, years from now.
Huh? I said they sure showed those 10 people. Right.
So
disappointed.
You have 10 angry tweets. Hey, you fucked up our podcast, you jackasses.
No. It's funny. I think 10's being a little liberal.
This introduction topic is actually pretty appropriate for what Iggy, you said that should be our main topic for today or this week, which is good versus evil.
Okay. Well, before to initiate the conversation, first off, though, I wanted to mention, like, I got Infamous the previous week and beat it. And, of course, everybody that has been following the game or already has the game knows that the series is pretty popular for having a traditional kind of like a good or evil choice for how to play your game. Not unlike, you know, some other games like BioWare's games, that sort of thing. But I was curious about how they would implement it, because in their particular case for Infamous 2, I'm not going to spoil anything, so nobody worry about that. Because I know sometimes I do.
Also, Infamous 1, no spoiler, please. Yeah. I suck and haven't played it yet.
Yeah, I understand. Even though it's an oldish game, now that PSN is offering it for free, I want to be fair and not say anything about Infamous 1, because there's a bunch of people that haven't played it that will play it.
I'm behind the times.
That's all right. I haven't finished it, so you know, I'm just as guilty. So Infamous 2 has, and this is shown in trailers, so it's not a spoiler, has two characters that you can choose to align yourself with, basically. And they make it really obvious, even color-wise. There's not skin color, like color. I just realized that because one is black and one is Asian. I don't know.
Okay.
Sorry. So one is this character named Quo, and she's this kind of mannish-looking Asian woman. I'm sorry. That has, like, ice powers, and she's the good side. And then you have Nyx, who's this, like, Southern Belle kind of black girl with dreads that is, she has, like, this weird oil fire power that's the bad side. And you basically choose through missions that you pick, you're not forced into doing, whether you're helping at one or the other. And through, you know, aligning yourself more often with those characters, you kind of set yourself down a path to kind of be closer to one of them than the other. Not romantically, just in terms of alignment.
Right.
And I find that pretty interesting, because that naturally gives you a lot of replay value. Not only because you obviously would have at least two different endings, you know, from alignments, but also that even along the way, you can mix and match missions and say, like, well, I kind of, like, Quo has a good idea for this particular mission, So I'll follow her for this. And Nyx later on has a really cool mission for like infiltrating something that I thought just sounded way better. So I join that. But then whenever you do that, you obviously cancel out the good side version of that or the bad side version. So it makes you want to go back and replay it anyway, so you can pick all the different missions that you didn't pick. So I think it's pretty smart on their planning. I think what's dumb is that they're not thorough with all the cutscenes. Like, they do have certain things that Cole, the main guy, says that will reflect, like, he's kind of aligned more with Nyx than with Quo or vice versa. Like, he'll refer to them more than the other one. However, there's this one case I can think of in particular, it's not plot related, where I got this super move that can basically suck in the energy from like everyone around you, like a mass drain that just like obliterates at least normal people around you to give you energy. So I did that and I wiped out like 30 people in one shot. Tons of like negative points associated to my character. And then I go into a cutscene for the next mission and Cole is saying something about, you know, like, Gotta protect this city, gotta do all this stuff. And I'm like, wait a minute. If I'm such an asshole character right now from the actions I'm doing, why the hell would his character be talking about trying to save things or trying to do generally positive sounding things? And it just feels like, I don't know if they ran out of time or if they just felt like, well, we only need to do a couple scenes to indicate your progress down one of these paths. Like, I wish there were more cutscenes that associated correctly with what you're doing as a player, not just the missions that you've chosen.
So overall, though, were you doing more of the good stuff, and then you deviated to one of the bad ones, you said?
Well, yeah, that's usually how... Unfortunately, I'm one of these gray people, basically. Like, this happened in Knights of the Old Republic for me a lot. Like, I play it the way I feel, not the way I think I'm going to get achievements or whatever. Because a lot of people do, like, oh, I need to get all the achievements for the bad stuff, so I'm going to just be super bad or super good, whatever. And usually in a game like this, you're rewarded for that, because every time you're even more bad or even more good, that karma scale shifts. And you get more abilities based on like how extreme you are in either category. Unfortunately, when you're kind of in the middle, you don't get many of those abilities, and it ends up hindering your ability to be like really deadly with your powers. So, what I was trying to say basically is like, I generally play like a good character, but sometimes if somebody pisses me off, I'm gonna leech their life. I'm gonna hunt them into a river if they piss me off. I'm gonna, you know, sometimes Nyx's missions were just more fun, so I would just do those because they weren't necessarily like super evil, but they were more fun than Goody Two Shoes Quo, who, by the way, if we're talking about personality differences, that also I think plays into how I would choose something, because Quo is a little bit, she's always kind of scoldy, she's always kind of a little higher than thou attitude, and Nyx, I mean, you kind of figure out both of their backstories, but I kind of sympathize more with Nyx. So even though she was fucking crazy, honestly, sometimes with her evilness, I still felt like I liked her better, if that makes sense. Whoa, what?
Oh, I'm sorry.
We just went through a wind tunnel.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I didn't think it was going to make that much sense.
That's all right. But yeah, so I tried to play gray, and that I wish there was a game that basically, you know, said, hey, good on you for not just following one fucking way or the other. You know, you're playing like an actual person would play.
Yeah, well, does the game have enough replay value where you feel like you're going to go back through and play all white and play all black?
Yeah, I think I will.
Because people like extremes. People just like extremes because they're more interesting, I guess. Whereas, you know, people who actually think about what they're doing instead of just acting like, oh, I'm going to be good or I'm going to be bad. You know, it's not as exciting, people acting in grays, I guess. So they feel like nobody's going to take this path. Why should we make the effort to give them, you know, incentives? Like, you know, you said that if you're evil, you probably get certain powers. When you're good, you probably get certain powers. But there's not really any incentive to be in the gray, I guess.
Well, I feel like I'd almost wonder if we could do some kind of poll somehow. That if maybe more people might feel the way I do. That it's not always it doesn't always feel right to be all the way on one side or the other. Like, I don't always want to be doing evil things. Like, I actually felt guilty a bunch of times. Like, for example, your karmic meter has three stages. You know, stage one, you get an ability. Stage two, you get a better ability. Stage three, you get, like, an ultimate kind of ability. And that's where you max out, and you're called either infamous or, like, a hero. So, and that's what they did in the other game, too, I believe. So, unfortunately, my level was pretty low because I kept playing it gray. So at a certain point, you know, when I'm getting near the end of the game, I'm like, well, I want all the powers. So I had to run around. It's terrible. I had to run around just horrendously just attacking everybody in sight, you know, like lightning striking everything, throwing cars at people, just like, you know, doing really terrible things. And I started feeling really guilty. Like, I don't want to be like a little kid. Like, I don't want to be bad. I want to be a good person.
I don't want to be the pirate.
Yeah, but I also want to do like a firebird attack. So what am I supposed to do?
The game is punishing you for being indecisive.
Well, I wasn't being, but that's the thing. I wasn't being indecisive. I was being very clear in the choices I felt I wanted to make. Right. But I don't know.
It's not being indecisive. That's just being a person.
Right.
Very rarely is a person all good or all bad.
Right.
And I wish that more, you know, not just video game companies, but everybody would realize this. You know, fiction writers, movie writers, and directors, and everybody like that.
Yeah, I mean, if it's probably going to be a lot more complicated, but if somebody could make a game where you actually could get that third option of how to behave. And have something. Maybe that's not the optimal ending you would get, for example, but it would be an ending. So, like, you would be able to get at least some kind of path for neutral. Not neutral, but, like, neutral-ish. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, usually you're kind of strong-armed into one ending or another in a lot of these games. Same thing with Mass Effect. Like, either you're going to be the shepherd with the blue background behind him, or you're going to be the shepherd with a red one. Like, I think maybe in the first one you could get one with, like, no color, but it just feels like, oh, I that's not really an ending. I don't know what that is. But, yeah, I think there's a lot of potential in good versus evil, definitely for the replay value, but also in the complexity. Like, you know, back in the day, NES, Super NES, all those, like, earlier systems, that era, that wasn't really a fundamental. But I think now that we're maybe a little bit more, hopefully, sophisticated as game developers, I would think that this could be something that just starts popping up everywhere, not just, you know, in BioWare games or Sucker Punch games or, you know, a handful of other companies.
Yeah.
It's a choice that I think is very desirable to me, because I've played so many really linear games where you get this illusion that you're making an impact. Like, press A to do this right now, but you realize that's the only move you can really do. You can't opt out of that. You either die or you do that thing.
Yeah, that's true.
And I love games like this where, yeah, you might lock out an ability to bond with one of the other characters, but by doing this, you advance more with that current character, you know? So I think that really should be something that game devs try to stick in their games. Not shoehorn it in, because that's not good either, where you just kind of add it as an afterthought.
Yeah.
Because that's just as bad, honestly.
I'm trying to think now of any games that, I mean, I should have thought of this ahead of time, I guess. But I'm trying to think of any games that have done any experimentation in this realm. I mean, from what you're describing, I mean, obviously this is not the same realm at all, but the first thing that comes to mind is that whole thing in Final Fantasy VII, you know, where depending on how your behavior has been with an interaction with the other characters, like it gives you, like, I mean, I haven't, you know, like, I can't remember exactly how it goes, but right, like, it gives you a different kind of, like, story path in the middle of the game, like, oh, you were closer to these people, so...
Are you talking about like the carnival date or whatever, for example?
Yeah, like that's like the apex of it, right? Like, oh,
didn't they do something like that in Final Fantasy VIII as well?
Oh, do they?
I think they do. From what little I remember about that game,
I don't. I don't remember very much about that game. I remember really hating that stupid magic draw system. That is the dumbest magic system I've ever played in an RPG. Like, hey, here's an idea. There's all these great magic spells, and you can siphon them off from bad guys. Oh, okay, that's cool. Yeah, and now you can allocate this, like, times 99 comet or whatever onto one of your attributes and make it super strong. Oh, that's cool. Now I can't use any of these spells, because as soon as I start using the spells, whatever that attribute that's tied to it gets worse.
Huh.
So why would I'll never do magic. I'll always have fucking physical fighters, because if I try to do Kiraga or something, then I have to track down a Cactuar or whatever the hell does that spell and try to siphon it off of them again.
Ha. Huh. That's just like Final Fantasy Legend 2 on the Game Boy has a similar system.
Same problem?
Yeah. Except
didn't everybody complain about the junction system and they put it in another game?
What's that?
That's all I heard about Final Fantasy VIII when it came out, was just people complained about the junctioning system, and then they put it in another game anyway.
I don't...
You said it was in another game after that.
Oh, wait, you mean this system? I'm confused.
Magic draw?
The junctioning system, yeah, the drawing system, the one they had in 8.
Wait, what else did they put it in?
I thought that David mentioned they had it in another game after that.
That game was like forever ago, though.
That's a Game Boy.
Yeah, it was for Game Boy. But that was, I mean, that was simply just like, if you have a mage on your team, it's not like classic Final Fantasy where it's like you learn spells over time, you know, or you buy a spell and you can use it this many times using this much magic point. There's no magic points, and it's just like you bought this spell and you can use it 15 times and that's it, you know. It was like the lamest. It's like, well, dude, I never want to use that spell then, because what if I need it sometime? And
that's, you know? It's very similar. I mean, the purpose is different, but the result is kind of the same with the Final Fantasy VIII one, because there was, I can't remember, I think people nicknamed it like the Island of Hell or something in 8, whereas this tiny little island on the map that would have these rarer monsters, and so they would drop or siphon these much better magic spells.
Oh.
So those are the ones you'd want to attach to, like your HP or your strength or something like that. But the problem is then you'd never really be able to use those spells, because then you'd have to track down those rare monsters again, which I don't know how long that would take, depending on your luck with, you know, the random attack thing,
yeah.
Or the random battles, and try to siphon it out again, which later on when you get into like the end game and you're just doing boss battles and stuff, you're not going to be able to go back there again. So,
right.
Yeah, I thought that system was really stupid.
What were we talking about? What started this?
Well, the choices for...
I got choices for 7.
Yeah.
I choose not to play Final Fantasy 8.
Yeah, sure. 8 was a little dumb. And like it seemed like it shifted gears at a certain point. It's like, okay, we're Dawson's Creek style Final Fantasy. And now we're going to switch into this... What did they do at the end? It was some weird time-traveling nonsense.
Yeah. It was like they were in an orphanage, and then there was like some... Actually, the only cool part of the game is when they like did the time compression thing. It was a really cool sequence, actually. But other than that, yeah, it sucked. Like, the story was just a complete clusterfuck.
The ending made no sense. The cutscene?
No, it didn't. Dude, that's like... Square. Square can't write a story for shit.
But everybody always says that they can.
Well, I never thought they could.
Well, remember 7? Everybody always said, oh, God, this story is so epic. If you think about it, there's a lot of elements in 7 that make no fucking sense, especially the Sephiroth-related stuff. Like, what is this other clone? Like, what's happening? What the hell happened at Nibelheim that you're trying to figure out? And it's just a clusterfuck. But, Adam, were you going to say something?
Choices system in 7.
Huh?
We were talking about the choices system in 7.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that affects the overall story. It does affect how much of a romance thing you got going on with Tifa or Aeris, right?
Right, yeah, exactly.
That's the one I'm thinking of, where if you were kind of nicer or whatever, or you interacted more, I think, with one of those characters, than when you went to the carnival, or the gold... Was it Gold Saucer, I guess? You'd be able to have that little carousel ride with one of them. And
it's,
if you fucked up,
even...
you got Barret.
Yeah, I was going to say it works with Barret, too.
That just sounds badass.
I think they don't talk or something. I can't
remember
what happens. It was pretty funny. I never got that one because, of course, I tried to play it normally. I think you had to do something, like maybe piss both of them off or something to get Barrett.
That's awesome. And that nobody wants to ride with you.
Yeah, basically. That's like, right. Hey, you going on this motherfucking ride? I'll go with you.
I think I'd rather ride with him.
Well, you know, that's super prerogative cool. In that game. So.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But the choices, I think, is going back.
It's funny, like, this is a dead point to bring up, I guess, but remember, like, about 3 weeks ago, it's similar, like, remember I brought up the topic about how, like, in Dragon Warrior, there was similar kind of false choices, where it's, like, it's cool, kind of cool, like, well, you know, there's the choice of, like, would you, you know, do you want to go good or evil? But if you choose evil, you die, you know, like, instantly. And it's like, well, dude,
yeah,
that's
not a choice. About that.
And yeah. It's pretty funny, though, because it tricks you, basically, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, okay, I have an example of a very minor good or evil, but I bet it's one that everyone's played and no one has ever picked the evil route, which is Bioshock 2, where you can choose to harvest the little sisters, to either harvest them or rescue them.
Mm-hmm.
That's impossible. Who can play that and kill these little girls in this
well,
game?
Well, that's what they did in the first one. I mean,
well, even when I played the first one, like, it wasn't even graphic. Like, I, you know, I always chose to rescue them just because, you know, I'm a totally cool guy and all, but I mean, but I actually tried to, you know, I'd harvest one of them once, and, like, it wasn't even that graphic of a scene, but, like, just the thought.
Yeah.
Is it more graphic in 2? I don't even think that I harvested
well,
one of them.
I think
that.
It's the same.
It's the same.
Because basically all that happened, like, the girl went off screen, like, he just had the slug in his hand, and I guess he ate it or whatever.
In 2, in the end, it's reflected more, because there's subtle changes in the end. There's really 2 different endings, and then subtle changes in those, so it's a total of 4 endings possible. But because that one, you really have to choose with every one whether or not you want to take the Atom, or if you want to rescue them and take less Atom from them.
Yeah. You know? I think it's something like if you only get 1 or 2 little sisters, then you get more or less the neutral ending, I believe. And then, right. Like, if you get all of them or none of them, then you get those, like, extreme ones, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of like an expansion over the first one, because the first one was really just one or the other, right? Even if you
there,
got, like,
there
one...
Were, there were technically 3 different endings. Like, one was the good one. The second was, like, when Tenenbaum was, you know, like, voicing over the ending, but kind of in a sad voice. And if you harvested all of them, like, it was the same thing, but she said it more angrily or something like that.
Yeah. But the clip was still the same, right?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty
much.
See,
that's too subtle. It's chickening out. Oh, not chickening out. It's being lazy.
Well, Ken Levine didn't even want to add that ending to the game. They said that, you know, the publishing company's like, you need to have an ending to this game. You know, and they only had time for 2 or 3. You know, the 3 on how, based on how you look at it.
I guess it shows, because the ending for Bioshock 1 is pretty damn short, regardless of what you pick. I mean, you have that really kind of lame boss battle at the end with a giant Oscar award, and then you...
And then,
that game just fell apart after, like... That game just fell apart, like, in the last third.
Well,
which is really,
really
unfortunate, because I love that game.
Really, the big kick, the peak, is the revelation.
Like, I think you can say it now. It's been a couple years.
Well, I don't know if David's going to kill me for saying it or not.
Have you haven't played it yet?
I haven't played it yet.
Who doesn't know?
Okay, other people listening that have played it, they know what I'm talking about. When you get that revelation of what's going on, and you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
That is the height. Everything goes downhill from there.
Yeah.
So, honestly, how do you beat that?
It's so good. It's so close to a perfect game. Like, I can
I'm not saying it's not good. It definitely is good. Yeah. But, sorry, what were you going to add to that?
No, nothing.
Go on, I want to hear it. I want to hear you have to say, Adam.
Play it, David. That's all I have to say. Play it now.
You should play it, David.
I know, I should. Hey,
2007 was a good year.
I have an example, but for the last, like, few minutes, I've been desperately trying to look up the name of this game, and I can't find the name of the game, because it would really help if I can tell you what the
name is. Okay, describe.
But the ending of that game was so ridiculous. Well, the whole game is ridiculous, but it was a PC game, and it came out, like, circa 1998. It was, like, really, you know, it's been a while. And God, I basically, it's this absurd game with, like, massive amounts of gore. It was kind of like, I'm trying to think of how to describe, like, the look of it. Because the look of it was, like, super photoreal. It was like Mortal Kombat 1 style, if you think about it, like sprites made out of actual people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And all these like full motion video sequences and stuff like that, but the game kind of had this Silent Hill feel to it, but like kind of almost like as if like you combine that with like a with what's his name, Mr. with like Sam Raimi, you know, like this kind of tongue-in-cheek horror, you know.
You're talking about Phantasmagoria, are you?
Is it Phantasmagoria I'm thinking of? It might
by
be
Sierra Online.
Maybe, but it was like really this really like raunchy kind of game.
Well, did it have like a half-assed like sex scene that was still technically like PG-13?
I don't know. I'm looking into it to see if...
Yeah, try typing in Phantasmagoria. That definitely sounds like what you're talking about.
Oh, no.
Because it's full motion video, right?
Right, but I think...
They made two of them.
It looks like this, but this isn't the game. It's not Phantasmagoria. It's a different game, because I don't think it was made... It was part of, like, that whole Roberta Williams world, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think I had Phantasmagoria, but this was a different game. But anyway, you're this dude. You're like this like mid-20s dude who the premise is kind of like, or the, you know, the gameplay is like you wake up in this town. You have no idea how you got there or anything, so you're just kind of going around. And everything in the town is like really weird and really odd. There's like every sort of strange horror thing is happening, but like, and you're going around just kind of kicking the shit out of everything and killing things.
Oh, so it's an action game.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, like, not super action. It's more akin to, like, a King's Quest-style game than it is to, like, a straight-up action game.
So it's an adventure game?
Exactly.
Is it like text-based?
No, it's more like the later King's Quest games where, like, you click on things and things happen, you know? Like, you can acquire, like, butcher knives and like giant machetes, but you would have to like don it, and then like you click on like the thing or the person, then you basically hack them to pieces, you know. But the ending of this game was crazy, and like you basically go up through this tower where you meet this woman also in the game, and the woman is having the same sort of experience as you. Like, she's like, I don't know how I got here, I don't get what this is all about, you know. And and then in the end, like, you go to this tower and you have to climb this rope to get up this tower, and you hear her, you know, she's in this tower, and you hear her screaming the whole time. And then when you get to the top of the tower, it turns out that her hair is the rope, so you've been like pulling on her scalp the whole time,
dude.
And when you get to the top, though, there's this dude there, and he's like, hey, I'm from like the something something corporation, and he's like, what's happening is, he's like, you and this woman, you guys are inside of like a virtual reality simulation right now. You guys have been, you're trapped in this like VR sim that we put you in, you know. And they're like, we are basically testing out like people's psyche, and you know, we're trying to like recruit people. And he's like, so basically we're giving you the option, you can come work for us, but you have to kill this woman, or you cannot kill this woman, and then we kind of decide what we get to do with you, you know.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's Harvester.
That's it. That's it. That's it. Yeah. That's the game.
It was something crazy, like they're trying to make a group of killers or something.
Yes, that's it. And the whole experience of the game has been them trying to kind of like, you know, desensitize you to murder and killing, and you know, so like the whole game is basically about like being faced with these, you know, situations where you have to kill things. And so the ultimate test at the end of the game is, okay, are you going to murder this person who's become your friend now, or are you not, you know? And that's the final decision you have to make in the game. and you get like these two completely different, completely rad endings, depending on what you do.
The good one is like the guy that you've been talking to is shakes his head all like disappointed. Yeah. He's like, well, you're not leaving this virtual world, but we'll let you like pretend like you'll think that you married her and had a full life and all this nonsense in the span of like 10 minutes.
Exactly.
And then, but the real ending, the real ending.
When you kill her, that ending is hilarious.
Is when you kill her. It's fucking crazy. Anybody, whoever's actually listening to this, go to YouTube, look up Harvester ending. It's hilarious, like how cheesy it is. They're in the car driving home after after he agrees, and he like, no, wait. He kills her, and then he's in a car driving home afterwards, and doesn't he like pick up a hitchhiker or something?
Well, I'm not. I don't remember that part.
He picks up somebody and like kills that person, basically.
Oh yeah, that's true. He does. He picks up some person and then he basically murders them. And then you're right. And then the final scene is him at home playing Harvester on his PC, and his mom comes in and makes
She goes. She goes.
She makes him come and like.
This kind of games will rot your brain.
Yeah, and he's like, no, mom, that's. Bullshit.
No, but it's the way the dude says it, the actor. He goes, that's bullshit, mom. Like, he's like gritting his teeth. That's bullshit, mom. And then he goes and plays. And then it does this weird zoom in, like CG zoom in, like early CG, into like his stomach or something.
Oh,
and there's
right.
like the finger of the person he killed in there.
Yeah, that's right. He basically, I remember like thinking it was so funny, the ending. Like he says, that's bullshit. And then she's like, well, just, don't watch any of that violent television. You know, she's like, you know how much I hate those.
Oh, Roadrunner cartoons.
Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote cartoons. And then he's like, what? Wile E. Coyote cartoons?
And then he goes, Roadrunner cartoons.
And he starts laughing maniacally. And then, like, the camera flies into his mouth, down his esophagus, and, like, through his intestines and into his stomach. And then there's the finger of the girl that from like the place or whatever.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I'll post a link in the show notes for this. But he goes, Roadrunner cartoons, Roadrunner cartoons, and then he starts this crazy fucking laughter, and then it goes like in like the camera goes into his mouth and into the tummy.
It's like a prototype House Vision.
What?
House Vision, like when you're watching House, and it goes into the internal organs.
Yeah, basically. Okay. It's such a bizarre game, though.
I have tons of questions about this because I want you to elaborate, but I'm looking at the Wikipedia article here, and this is their list of controversial items in the game, and I want you to tell me some of what kind of things are in here. Okay. Implied sexual intercourse, masturbation, S&M, profanity, cannibalism, prostitution, pedophilia, sexually transmitted diseases, stereotypes of homosexuals, Native Americans, and Italians.
I hate games with Italians.
I think that's all super accurate.
Okay, so we heard about the cannibalism, obviously.
Yeah.
What kind of stereotypes? What kind of why is there sexually transmitted diseases?
Doesn't he have sex with that girl at some point in the game?
Well,
I can't remember.
And the thing is like, I can barely remember the game, but I do remember that, and I would probably say that they probably nailed most of those easily by whoever this character is that you're playing. He would react verbally to almost everything you did and every choice you made, and the comments that he made were like always such weird comments, and I'm sure like there was tons of comments he made that like fit most of these descriptions if they're all implied, you know what I mean?
The character was Steve Mason.
Okay,
Steve
right.
Steve Mason, okay.
And the game also had a dynamic dialogue system which included over 12,000 lines of spoken dialogue.
Awesome. Jeez.
Whoa. It's like Blizzard before Blizzard.
That's the thing that I remember the most about the game is just him just saying stuff all the time.
But
me and my brother still quote that game. Because it's just like he had such an odd like attitude whenever you would try to do anything. He would basically like be making fun of you for like doing things that didn't make sense. If you made any wrong decision, he would just be like, well, that didn't work. He would say, look at you.
That's bullshit, Mom.
I swear to God, later on, look at that video. It's super hilarious. It's kind of I'm a little surprised you played it when you were a kid, though, because that's a little much for a kid.
I had the advantage of having an older brother.
So he got it, and he's like, here, play this game.
Well, he would show it to me. He's like, Dave, you got to come see this weird game.
You got to come see this fake sex in this game. It's awesome.
I've got all this pedophilia.
The best part about that listing is, like, it has Italians.
I wonder what they have. Like, is it like a Mario brother kind of, like, Italian?
Maybe it's like somebody dressed in a Mario costume and, like, being the Godfather or something. It's like all negative Italian stereotypes wrapped in the one horrible character.
He's like, oh, you're probably going to catch AIDS from that dirty Guido.
Nice. There you go.
Click on a guy standing over there, and that's what he says.
But see, that's aside from all the gross elements, though, that's kind of like what I'm talking about. Like, there's not enough good versus evil choices in a lot of games where that has a clear, those two endings are clearly different.
Right.
Like there's some.
And you can carry through with both of them, you know? It's not a false choice where it's like you go to choose the bad one and it's like, no, and it steers you back to the good one, you know?
Yeah. Like usually you would think if a bad guy is offering you like, join me, you know, we'll do awesome stuff together. Usually that's like the wrong choice. Like it'll just be a game over and you don't realize it. Like what you were saying with the Dragon Warrior game. But like in this case, it's so bizarre because it's like, yeah, you could totally do that. Let's go hang out. Let's go kill people for fun.
Well, I think the greatest joke is like when you're playing an RPG and the guy asks, you want to go on an adventure with me? If you say no, a lot of them are like, oh, you really meant yes, didn't you? But then they turn that on their head in Mario RPG or one of those games where you actually push no and the game's over.
It's like, you idiot, you're supposed to say yes to everything.
It's like, why even bother doing that? I always kind of wondered.
Oh. Well, to give you the illusion, that's the whole thing too. Like a lot of the games will try to give you the illusion of your choice, whether it's good or bad or neutral even, by just having these fake yes or no's. If you say no, they're like, oh, we'll come back later, which means you'll have to come back later and eventually say yes. Like, are you ready to do this mission? Even when you're like, no, I don't think so. Like, oh, come back when you are ready. Like,
I think Bioshock turned that on its head brilliantly. That whole choice system where it's like, well, I guess I can't talk about it. I forgot.
Poor David.
I mean, that's just a masterstroke in fighting there, what they did with that. Like, the comment on that system, too, yeah.
Yeah. You got to play it now.
I know.
Yeah.
You guys remember, do you remember the game Sewer Shark on 3DO and Sega CD?
Yes.
Yep.
Do you remember that part? Like, that game, I mean, it's so repetitive and it's such a pain in the ass to get through it that, like, you get halfway through, by some miracle, if you can get halfway through, you're treated to, like, this kick butt, you know, cutscene where basically the main character's like, hey, man, I've taken our ship that we use and I've outfitted it with this like kick butt gun now. Like there's this big super duper gun. And there's that part where he's like, okay, we're going to try it out now. And I remember like as a kid, I was watching it and I had in my head kind of that, I was like used to the idea of the false choice, you know?
Uh-huh.
I was like, I'm like, okay, well this is kind of like a cutscene. Like there's nothing I can do wrong, you know? It's until the game starts up again. And there's that part where he gets back in like the heads up display kind of thing. And he's like, okay, man, let's take it for a spin. He's like, get ready to blow the door out, you know, or like in 3, 2, 1, go. And I thought it was just part of the game, like the cutscene. I'm like, well, the game's not going to let me screw this up, you know. And I didn't do anything. And as a result of not doing anything, the dude actually gets pissed at you. And he's like, why wouldn't you shoot the door? I just told you to shoot the door down. He's like, that's ridiculous. Clearly you're not cut out to operate this kind of machinery. You need to get the hell out of here. And the game ends. And it's like, what? And there's no continue. And you
halfway through the game?
What's that?
Halfway through the game, it does that
to you? Halfway through the game ends if you don't, you know, make that, you know, actively take a role right there. And instead of it, I was expecting it to just be like, you know, oh, you didn't, oh, maybe you didn't understand, now do it. You know, it's like, no, you didn't do this, well, you suck. And then it ends the game.
Oh.
I remember being so mad the first time, like, what? I didn't, what the hell is going on here?
That's a bit of a Price is Wrong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I remember thinking that was sweet. I was like, well, I have to give the game at least like some credit for like punishing me thoroughly for not doing this.
Wow.
Well, I can see why you're so into Harvester, because of all the S&M in that. So.
And the Italians. Don't forget the Italians.
Oh.
Well, David is part Italian, so.
Uh-oh.
There you go.
Use guys.
Uses guys is crazy.
Use guys, I'm gonna break your face.
I'm gonna break your face while I make a pizza and a pasta.
Yeah. You shut up on your face.
One arm a stir of the sauce, the other arm a punch of the face.
My girlfriend's gonna love to listen to this later.
Oh yeah, shit, I forgot. She's actually like Italian from Italy. Yeah. Just don't have her. She doesn't play video games, right? Don't have her listen.
Oh no, she has no idea what I'm talking.
Okay,
about.
Yeah, don't. It'll be easy, easy.
Nice.
Does she even know about Mario?
Oh, does she come know on. About
does she know about the negative Italian stereotype?
It's a me, Mario.
It's a me, Italian American stereotype.
Oh, speaking of, this is a slight derail, but you guys hear about how the Wii U is only gonna have one Wii U controller for the system?
That's what I heard at first, but now apparently Reggie, president of Nintendo US, says that there is going to be two available.
Really?
They're only gonna ship with one, but they're going to make it work with two.
That's interesting, because they made it sound like it could only handle one, unless now they're realizing, oh shit, we need to be able to make it work with two.
I think that's what happened, yeah.
Because what kind of family system is that where only one person can use the fucking thing?
Two kids fighting over the... I want to be the catcher in the baseball game this time.
It's teaching them the value of sharing.
Yeah, well, there's no sharing.
That's true.
It's an illusion.
It's a value like the choices of good and evil.
Yeah.
Right.
Huh. Yeah, but so that's funny that they're announcing that. I'm not sure, I don't know. My thoughts on that system are still very mixed. So the jury is out.
Still.
Yeah, they need a real game first before we can even start to judge that.
But they're playing a Zelda rehash and a Mario rehash and a Super Mario or a Super Smash Brothers rehash.
But did you see that amazing bird demo? Oh my god.
Yeah. It's like Kinect where you can pet tigers.
Yeah.
Kinect. You know I don't think we meant to turn this into a Wii U discussion, but yes. I think it goes to, yikes, I'm really tripping over my words here, but I think it's worth mentioning that, like, it's so strange that Nintendo, before they showed this system at E3, they were like, dude, wait till you see our next system, because it's totally going to be for, like, serious gamers now. And, like, no, I think that this has gone in the opposite direction. Like, it's even more in the super esoteric gaming market of, like people who normally don't play games will play this system because of its strangeness. You know what I mean?
It's, yeah.
Like, that's super odd to me. Just, like, yeah, man, we're bringing in the serious gamers back into the fold. No.
Well, because I think they think that just upping the capabilities of the system makes hardcore gamers all of a sudden, you know,
interested,
get hard-ons for it. Yeah, but that's not all. I mean, you have to have games that also support that. There's a lot of people I've been talking to. Yeah, granted, there will always be people that will be excited about another Mario game. Like, oh, the other Mario games are so much fun. I'm not saying that the upcoming one won't be, but I do also know a lot of people that as soon as they saw a lot of that E3 footage for upcoming, you know, Link, Mario, all those games, thought, oh, well, I kind of played that. I don't I don't see why I need to keep playing the same stuff, regardless of how much nicer it looks. I mean, even that Zelda footage that they showed, the fake footage, whatever, they showed on the Wii U during that promo video, it still looks like the movement is the same as Twilight Princess, Ocarina of Time, like that same, you know, targeting system kind of thing. Like, right. They haven't moved past that. And they got all those 3DS games that are actually exact copies. Star Fox 64, which I thought was actually just a new Star Fox, but nope. No. And then Ocarina of Time 3DS, that's just Ocarina of Time, but with better poly count and graphics slightly. But the game itself is exactly the same.
Well, so I have to give them credit at least, or Nintendo credit at least, when they, at least in the Mario series specifically, in each new system iteration, usually the Mario game has something completely original and super rad that is new to that experience, you know?
Well, like,
I feel like each... Huh?
Like Galaxy.
Yeah, like Galaxy, like Mario 64, like Super Mario World. Each one of those iterations has, like, introduce something new and super awesome to
them. Well, if you think about it, it's really not that new. Because, I mean, Galaxy is really just expanding upon what they started with Mario 64.
Yeah, but I mean, they have all those elements, like messing with gravity and, like, you know, basic game mechanics like that, which was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, talking purely from a gameplay standpoint, like, not from a graphic standpoint. Like, the gameplay has definitely, you know, gone in, like, completely original directions with each iteration. Maybe not Mario Sunshine.
Yeah, I was going to say, nobody mentions that one.
Like, that game is, like, we'd rather forget about it.
It's balls.
Yeah. But, Mario, I mean, yeah, balls. Mario Galaxy was, like, a whole new Mario experience. And, you know, and each one going backwards, I think, has been as well. So.
Yeah. But, I mean, the problem is, how many more... They're starting to make a lot of their Mario games look the same. And so they need to kind of find some way to break out of that. I mean, even that Mario 3DS game that they're trying to make, which is original, it's not a remake, still looks like a lower res version of like a Mario Galaxy, but with less options. And this is the part I will always be sore about this. The Tanuki suit that they showed in the video.
Oh, yes.
You can't... Okay, remember Mario 3, my favorite Mario game, where you get the Tanuki suit. You can turn into a stone statue for who knows what reason why. You can fly. You're really awesome. Okay, when I saw it in the promo video for the title right now is just Super Mario 3DS. I'm sure it'll be something else. They show him and he's jumping around. So I'm like, oh, this is going to be awesome. I can be a Tanuki in a Mario game again. That's kind of tempting me. Then I find out the following day, it's just the suit. You can't fly, and you can't turn to stone. So what the hell am I wearing the suit for? Don't tell me I'm just wearing the suit to flick enemies, because he already can do, like, weird flick attacks. Like, Mario, he's been upgraded. He already does his own weird, like, kill the bad guy in, like, three different ways kind of thing now.
Right.
Adding a tail from an NES era is not really doing anything.
But it's nostalgia, and that sells games nowadays.
Well, I got pissed off because that's blatant. Not like any of the other stuff isn't blatant nostalgia, but this is like the worst type because they're clearly using an image of something that everybody was like, well, that was obviously the best suit ever. So we're like, okay, we'll use the best suit ever, but we won't give you any of the elements that made it the best suit ever.
Well, it's kind of like what happened with Sonic 4. They just like said, well, it looks like old Sonic, so it must be like old Sonic. It's kind of like the same problem, I think.
Well, the reason that they said that they didn't make it fly, and I totally agree with you that it's kind of a ripoff here, but they're like, well, we couldn't really get it to work with the 3D, and it would kind of, like, stretch the boundaries of the levels and stuff, and so we
That's valid, but if that's the case, they just shouldn't have used that suit. That's a simple, you know, just use something. Use a Hammer Brothers suit. I don't care. Like, use a frog suit. I don't know. Use one of the other shitty suits from Mario 3.
Shitty suit.
Frog suit. Come on. I just used that when I didn't want to, like, die instantly. Like, you know when you get to that point in Mario 3 where you have, like, a ton of stuff in your inventory?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I got, like, 5 frog suits. Oh, well, put it
on. Frog suit was always the challenge with the, I mean, it was more of like I've played this game 10 times now. Now it's time to try to beat an airship in the frog suit.
Yeah, because you can't run. Your jumping is kind of slightly delayed.
Just so you can get, like, the rad, like, message that the king says to you if you actually make it that far.
Why was it something like, oh, Mr. Frog, thank you for saving... I can't remember what it says. Doesn't he reference it?
Yeah, he says... I mean, he says something in every one of the suits that you can get. But for the frog suit specifically, I think he freaks out and he's like, oh my God, he's like, you've been changed into an animal too. Oh. Like, you know, just sit still and I'll change you back or something like that.
I think, unfortunately, most of the time when I played the airships, I didn't use a suit or like it got messed up before I got to that point.
Do you remember the Hammer Brothers message? That one was super rad.
No.
Where he's like super impressed with the suit and he wants it. He's like... He's like, oh my God. He's like, I gotta have that suit. Want to trade? No dice? Too bad.
Oh, I do remember that. No dice part. I totally remember that. I don't know. I'm sorry. Like triggered something in me when you said that. Yeah, because I did it like once in that fucking like World 7, which is really the only place you could do that, I guess.
Yeah.
That super rare suit. Like, it was a fun suit. It kind of was a pain in the ass to use sometimes, but like... I tried to hoard those things because they're so rare.
It's funny when I think of World 7 and I think of having the Tanuki suit and just like the hilarious inevitability of like, you know, there's so many damn piranhas everywhere. And then like I would like jump and then as soon as I execute the jump, I'm like, ah, God damn it. Like I'm fucked. I'm going to fall onto that million pile of piranhas, you know? Yep. I'm like, oh, but... And then I would just instinctively turn myself to stone and, like, fall onto it. And I'm like, sweet, I'm alive for another 5 seconds.
Until those little black piranhas.
Yeah. And then, like, flashing back. Ah, shit.
You didn't have one of those Karibu shoes.
Yeah.
Karibu.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But anyway, going off on that Nintendo tangent. Yeah. Actually, I do think, trying to link this with the good and evil... It would be really interesting if they made, using one of those famous characters, if they actually made a game that would let you, I mean, I guess there's Mario RPG, right? But that doesn't really count. Right. Like a game where maybe, for example, if you were Mario and or Wario or something, you know, like where you'd play the same game, but going through it as those two different dudes.
Yeah. Unless... It'd be fun. Like in one way, if you play the Mario way, it's like, Mario is the good guy and Wario is the bad guy and you basically have to stop him. Or if you play Wario, it's the other way around. And when you're Wario, Mario is the bad guy. You know, like, not bad guy, but he's the opposition to you. Right. And you have to fight Mario.
This actually sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it?
Hmm.
Like a game where you play as, like, the villain and then as the... I'm going to have to look this up later. I almost feel like maybe somebody either... made one or attempted this. Not with, like, a famous character, though.
Right. Yeah.
But that would totally be... Like, they want to reinvigorate the franchises? Well, maybe try making a game from, like, a different point of view. I mean, it worked well for those Wario Land games.
Yeah, certainly.
So it would be essentially, like, Wario Land plus Mario Land, but the same land, basically, that they're going through.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
Yeah, no, I think, as I said before, like, this is kind of I wouldn't say it's untapped, because people have obviously tapped this resource, but I think it's a not often tapped resource, and I think it gives you a lot of replayability, and it's, it makes you talk about it to people, because even with Infamous 2, there's somebody else at work that has been playing it, or at least looking at somebody's Let's Play videos of it, and, It spurs a lot of discussion. Like, a lot of people are like, man, I can't believe, like, such and such thing happened when you picked the other dude instead. Or, like, oh, man, did you see the ending? Oh, God. You know, like... not saying what it is, but... And they... Like, a lot of PlayStation... Actually, Xbox games do this, too. They have a lot of really good set pieces. Like, you, of course, have the really huge monster at some point. That's not a spoiler, because every game has one. Like, he's the size of, like, 50 stories, like a 50-story building. Kill it by hitting one of these convenient glowing points. Like, oh, the kneecaps are, I mean, just in general, like, oh, these kneecaps are glowing. Am I supposed to shoot them? Ah, it works. Like, wouldn't it be interesting if, I mean, even Shadow of the Colossus is kind of guilty of this. Like, you have to, I guess, for a gamer, reveal some kind of obvious weak mark.
Right.
Because otherwise they're like, I don't know what the fuck I'm supposed to do. But I do think the Shadow of the Colossus was more successful because they made it at least a little more subtle. Like, it looked like it was part of the monsters. Like, those little tattoo glowy things that you would hit. But, Infamous 2 is a little guilty of doing the, like, oh, it looks like I just took a bunch of, tappet lights or something and, like, put it on different parts of a monster's body. Which is all right, I guess, but it is a little goofy. I think.
That's good if you hate those lights.
Yeah, I'm going to shoot at your lights.
I hate those lights so much, I want to punch it.
And the game goes, well, that's perfect, because that's what you have to do.
What do people hate? Well, people hate flashing things. Put tons of those all over the place.
Yeah, what if they made a game that was purposely, like, hit everything but the lights? So, like, your instinct is to keep punching out the lights, and you keep getting, like, some kind of video game demerit, like, I don't know, lose some of your own life or something.
The whole game is just, like, counter game evolutionary behavior.
Well, once in a while, when there is a game that's counterintuitive like that that comes out, people actually like it because it's pointing out kind of overused issues in games. But, I don't know. I think there needs to be a little revitalization of these I wouldn't call them archetypes, but these common trends.
Nintendo, if you're listening, get on it.
I don't think they can hear you from underneath their giant Scrooge McDuck tower of money.
I think Miyamoto listens to this podcast every week. And he's taking these ideas to heart.
He's having somebody translate it for him.
Yeah.
Free ideas.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I'm expecting a check, Mr. Miyamoto. Thank you.
He's gonna be so sad when LulzSec takes us down.
Oh God, that'd be so retarded. They're really scraping the bottom of the barrel this week.
Nintendo. Take down those bastards on that podcast. I hate them.
Okay. What are you saying, Adam?
I said Nintendo is just going to dry up, though, because he steals all of his ideas from this podcast. So they're just going to close their doors.
Oh, my God. If only. But anyway, so I think that
about wraps up this topic for this week.
But a little homework for you viewers or listeners. Think about any games that you know of that that have the whole good evil motif. I think if you haven't finished them yet or tried them yet, I think they're worth a try. Like we mentioned, a lot of the infamous games are definitely worth a shot. You may have some feelings about how they implemented those, but they're still good. And of course, pretty much every BioWare game that has any dialogue options has automatic good evil choices along with BioShock. So if anybody has any games that we missed that use this interesting theme, email us at nameofgamepodcast@gmail.com and let us know, and we'll look into those. Or if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, you can email us that email address also. So until next time, we'll see you guys. Keep on gaming. Same game time, same game channel.
See you later.
See ya.
Bye, guys. Bye.
Hey, bye.
Best ever.
Bye.